Hey, folks, it's Marvin Cash, the host of The Articulate Fly. We're back with another Casting Angles with Mac Brown. Mac, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Marvin?
As always, just trying to stay out of trouble. Was the Easter Bunny good to you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the Easter Bunny was good. Nice weather. And we turned back to blackberry winter the last few days here.
Yeah, but you were telling me that the spring hatch activity has been pretty good, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The middle of the day has been really good. And starting middle of the day and towards evening has been great with hatches and spinner falls and four or five different things going on pretty much every day.
And so what should folks expect to see kind of in those early spring hatches in Western North Carolina?
Well, early in the morning, a lot of the trips you'll see start out there early in the morning. So, I mean, it's going to be more of a nymphing game early. And if they want to do more dry fly, then start midday. Dry fly, wet fly is both really good. Middle of the day, and wet fly can be like really good right up till dark. And so the hatches are, it's pretty easy to tell. I mean, just by looking up on the surface, once you start to see a lot of the risers and sippers everywhere, then you know what's going on. And what we look for always is looking for swallows. Like once you see all the hundreds of swallows on the river, the bugs are already in the air. And so that's always a surefire sign to switch over and move up, you know. But it's tough. I'd like to start everything at midday. But people want to start early and get done early, you know. So a lot of times it doesn't coincide with what the fish are going to do, you know? Because I'd say the best dry fly activity on average the last couple of weeks has been probably 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And we were talking before we started recording that, you know, even though you've got multiple species coming off and you probably got a fair amount of size variation because usually those early mayflies are relatively large, but then you've also got the small little guys like the blue-winged olives. But you know, we were talking about how people make fly selection, you know, too complicated.
That's right. I think they overthink it. And when you have a whole lot of activity on top, like I'm talking like in a minute to have 40 or 50 rises a minute in a little area that you're watching, I don't think it matters when it's that kind of a frenzy. As long as the size, shape, and color is even close, like even close. And I've done that a lot over the years just to prove a point, like put something like an elk hair caddis and there is no caddis, you know, and then that still works just as good as any other dry fly you'd pick. So I think that's kind of overrated. I think what people forget in the East Coast is it's very opportunistic fish in this part of the country. I think it's that way all up to Alleghenies, all the way to Maine. I don't think it's super selective anywhere that I've seen on the East Coast. So I think a lot of those early hatch books that we read in the, you know, the early 70s about matching it exactly and all that, I think that's overrated, to be honest. But I mean, as long as you have something on there that's floating on top, then you could say, okay, you got a drift and nothing happened. Let's say you did a dead drift, and then next thing you do is you animate the fly, let it drift a second, animate it again, and all of a sudden you have a fish. I think a lot of it's from the actions of what the angler's doing, more so than the fly that they're picking.
Yeah, and I would say, too, you know, probably that lack of selectivity is a function of the fact that the reality is most of our rivers are freestones, and as a result, they're relatively sterile, right? So, you know, fish, you know, don't really want to let anything that looks like food pass them by because it's not the buffet that it is in some other places in the country.
That's right. Well, a good example, this was on Easter when the kids were small. Like Connor's going to be 18 in a couple of weeks. This is back when he was probably 7, so it was 11 years ago. But I remember walking up there on Easter weekend with the family, and I picked 10 dogwood leaves off of a bridge up high on Deep Creek. And this was just a fun little experiment because I knew what would happen. And so I had Jennifer and the kids looking off the bridge. And I rolled each one of those little dogwood leaves up to about the size of a pea and would drop it in the river. And 8 of the 10 dogwood leaves got eaten within 3 feet adrift. So how picky are fish? And this is when there wasn't a hatch and the fish weren't coming up. So if 8 of 10 leaves got eaten within 3 feet adrift and it wasn't even prime time when they're looking up, feeding on the surface, what's that tell us? Don't overthink your dry fly. And I think that's why I wanted to talk about this for the podcast, just because I think people overthink it way more than they should.
Yeah, which then gets us to pattern. And I would say probably in our part of the world, you know, orange and yellow elk hair caddis, probably a parachute Adams, right? And then maybe something that sits a little bit higher up, you know, not as flat in the water as a parachute style fly. I don't know, maybe a humpy or something like that. And I mean, you pretty much got it covered.
Yeah, I think pretty much that would do it. And it's like those flies will skate well, like any traditional, like Catskill type flies are easy to skate and ride high up in the water. So if it's a windy day, having a fly that skates, because then it emulates the insects, because insects get blown a lot. So a good example, like a parachute sits flush down in the film, but they don't get blown naturally like the naturals that are getting blown. You know what I mean? So a parachute's kind of cuffed to get blown on the surface. And a lot of times, this sounds crazy, but we've had a lot of wind the last week, like 20 to 30 mile an hour gusts, pretty constant here. And when you look at the naturals, they're actually getting blown upstream really pretty quick. And then when you put a fly out there and it's kind of just sitting in the current or moving downstream when all the other naturals are going upstream, just little things like that of changing styles of flies to match what the naturals are doing makes, I think, a lot of times a big difference. And that's something you don't hear about in those hatch books or anything. I mean, but there's a reason why those flies that will skate and blow like the naturals are a lot of times a better choice if it's windy.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of that talk that I gave in Edison in Denver about trout food and you. And it's like, you know, you don't have to remember all this stuff. If you just sit and look and see what the food's doing, make your fly look like the food and behave like the food.
That's right. Then it's going to be a big, much bigger ticket, I think, to success by doing that. And yeah, it's just the big thing right now is that there's so many. Spring's such a wonderful time. I made a post the other day about the hatches, and some buddies in Ireland were texting me back and go, you know, it's prime time over there too, this time of year. And I think the thing is just to keep it simple and not overthink it. You know, don't worry about having the perfect bug. If it's the same size, shape, I mean, doesn't even have to be the color, because if you animate a fly, they're probably not going to see the color. I mean, if it's actually hopping and skittering and really moving erratic, all they know is something's there. And you're going to get what we call an impulse strike over something that's like selective, where they can roll up. And I'm sure people have dry flied, they've seen that, where the fish rolls up, its pec fins, and it follows it 2 or 3 feet downstream looking at it, then decides he doesn't want to eat it. You don't have to worry about those kind of behaviors when you actually animate it. You know, you're going after the one that wants to come and get it right then. A little bit different strategy.
Yeah, so we're kind of navigating this kind of shoulder season. It's kind of funny. I think we've had a 20-degree temperature drop here in Charlotte, and I know it's windy here. It's got to be howling where you are. But, you know, I know you've got schools coming up. You want to let folks know about those. And also, I know that you got people reaching out that want to get on the water.
Yeah, no, that'd be good. The big thing for this month, coming up after we got a school that's coming up, and it's a casting 2-day weekend school, April 27th, 28th. And we still got some room in that for the end, toward the end of April. And that's probably one of my favorite things of the whole year. That one in September, we do a 2-day weekend advanced line control class here for fly casting. And that's always a lot of fun. And the trips, the same information's on the same site at macbrownflyfish.com. And they can find, you know, that info on there pretty easy.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, listen, folks, you know, it's warming up. We're going to have a nice week or so of weather, I think, once this front passes through, and you owe it to yourself to get out there and catch a few. Tight lines, everybody. Tight lines, Mac.
Tight lines, Marvin.